It is time for this week's Message in the Bottle. Brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us in studio.
I'm feeling this. This is good. I'm glad this is the sort of Chili Peppers tune I picked on today, because I needed to come down just a couple notches after that hair-raising drive. If I happen to pass any of you, you probably didn't notice it was me, because I was the one traveling at a million miles an hour to get here on time. And here I am. For all of you, for all of me, for all of everybody.
Take a deep breath. There you go.
Well, again, this is why... That's good. That's good Chili Peppers. I had never heard that song before, and I just hastily had to find something that dealt sort of with the topic of today. And I've always been a Chili Peppers fan, but I don't know if anybody knows the Chili Peppers well. They've gone through a vast iteration of guitarists and subsequently sort of styles. And one of their guys, John Frusciante, who is fabulous. He was the guy with them in their big, you know, blow up Blood Sugar Sex Magic. But he also went insane, like you do. Listen, there's a lot of great guitarists that have made huge career moves by losing their minds. Most of them never came back afterwards. John actually managed to a little bit, but he made this series of recordings in his apartment that are both sad because they're just like the work of a lost soul, but they're also stunningly beautiful. There's just some soundscapes that actually just reminded me of. So if anybody ever wants to check that out, John Frusciante, To Record Water for 10 Days is the name of one of the albums. I think he recorded like 80 of them, because that's what you do when you lose your mind.
Well, yeah.
Cool. So that song was called Venice Queen. And today we're talking about much of the rest of the north part of Italy. Last week we sort of touched on Piedmont and... parts of the western part that kind of gives way towards France and everything. And today we're going to be talking about just several different areas. Italy itself is just, it contains just an unbelievable amount of vineyard lands, grapes, things that we do know, things that we don't know. So I'll try to kind of catch all of them now, right now, before next week we'll head into what I call the Sangiovese belt. As we leave Piedmont, we find a hugely mountainous region. Obviously, the majority of the northern end of the Italy itself is confined by the Alp Mountains and their varying offspring. Right, there's a lot of sub mountain ranges that come off of the Alps that we're going to talk about today. So as we leave Piedmont, we'll go first to the extreme north, again, coming out of the actual Alps, getting into what we call the Tyrol Mountains, T-Y-R-O-L. And there's two main wine regions here that I want to talk about. The one to the farthest north, the one where you find probably the most serious winemaking of the two regions, the one where you find... last names that are very Germanic in nature as opposed to Italian in nature. As I'm fond of saying, a lot of the inhabitants of this area look like they were extras from Sound of Music. I mean, they're blue-eyed, tall, you know.
Tyrolians.
Tyrolians. There you go. Exactly. Pardon me. I need a quench of my hoppy refresher.
That does look very refreshing.
By the way, this is a complete non sequitur. I'm drinking right now. This is Lagunitas Hop Hoppy Refresher. This is a non-alcoholic, slightly hopped, almost a seltzer beverage, and it is just my favorite thing of the summer. It is just light and crisp and refreshing and beautiful. So if you have an opportunity, and we carry it at the store, it's just amazing, and it helps on a day like this where, as Grandma Kimball. Grandma,
yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day, we'd call close. Yes. It's a close day. It's warm. We're getting the Tyrol Mountains kind of come down and sort of make this wonderful. There's this valley, and the part we're talking about right now is called Alto Adige. So the high Adige region. Yeah, and as I said, all these folks are very Germanic in nature, and fittingly. A lot of not only the winemaking style, but the grapes you see are very often hybrid grapes and things that you will find that were originally crafted in either Austria or Germany for some of these higher altitude regions, things like Silvaner, And then, of course, there's nothing planted so much over the entire swath of land that we're going to talk about today as the great Pinot Grigio, but indeed some of the finer efforts, the more crispy, wonderful minerally efforts are coming from this region. And it's what's also interesting is you see some interesting French varietals. People are making Sauvignon Blanc, again, a crispy white that loves racy minerality. So you're seeing some award-winning Sauvignon Blancs coming out of this area. The white grape Kerner, which folks who like, again, you know, the Germanic sort of orange rindy, wonderful citrusy wines, the Kerners is absolutely fantastic. Even some Chardonnay, you do see some Chardonnay for those who understand that Chardonnay doesn't want super ripe conditions. It actually wants, you know, that kind of cool climate. So all these things are really, really interesting in that part of the world. And as for reds, the reds center on the grape Schiava, which is it's a very perfumey light red. If you look, I mean, when you pour a glass of it, it's really easy to see through, and it's got less sort of bright fruit than you'd think, and a little bit more sort of dark toned fruit. It's a really, really neat wine. And then also the grape Lagrein, which I kind of describe as Merlot-y in on the nose, but much more tannic. And it can be made into really awful or really, really elegant wine. Lagrein, by the way, spelled L-A-G-R-E-I-N. And then also more rare, but still intriguing, certainly Pinot Noir, following along the lines of your Chardonnay Pinot Noir. You know, anywhere one grows, the other grows pretty well. And then also interesting Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc and Merlot. So some of these Bordelaise varietals that people brought up there, and it's they're doing quite well. So it's very interesting. Now south of that, excuse me, is the region of Trentino. So again, it's in this very long wide valley. It's picturesque as heck, but it's a little bit more industrialized. It's a little easier to get to than the Alto Adige region, and for that reason, there's some hits and misses. Varietals, especially again, Pinot Grigio, Pinot Grigio, Pinot Grigio, just everywhere. Some of it great, some of it not so great. That will be a running theme. Also the grape Teraldigo, which means the king of the Tyrol Mountains, although it is spelled T-E-R-O-L as opposed to T-Y-R-O-L, like the mountains are spelled. Yeah, Teraldigo, worth looking up again, and Pinot Noir. But still up and coming. You know, some people are doing great work there, and some people are turning out, you know, millions of cases a year. It's just kind of that region. South of there, we find a body of water that I've referenced quite a bit called Lake Garda. Lake Garda acts for this, you know, we're pretty far from either ocean here, either sea, I should say. So the Lake Garda, it acts as sort of this inland sea. It's very, very large. And there's wine regions all around it. And it's really kind of, if you put a pin in the middle of like northern Italy, that's where we're at. The most important wine regions along Lake Garda, or, you know, is they sit sort of on the southern eastern shore, regions that you may have heard of. There's Lugana, which grows the grape Lugana. It's the appellation of Lugana. And Lugana is essentially thought to be their local clone of the grape Verdicchio. If anyone's ever had Verdicchio, we actually have a lovely one in the store right now. But that's a sort of a sprightly little white, although the Lugana one tends to have a little bit more weight and nuttiness. And then you get into the regions where they grow the grape Garganega, which is a white grape, again, with high acidity and some breadth. The most famous expression is probably Soave, of which Soave Classico is the loftier appellation and expression. Soave probably got a bad rap along with the rest of the jug wine industry back in the day. That was definitely one of the wine region names that was absconded along with, you know, Burgundy and Chablis and Champagne, and it sounds so good, you know, Soave. It's, you know, just you slip into it, but serious Soave is absolutely gorgeous. and not harsh or anything like that. It's just not like some easy drinking wine. Like Serious Suave is as serious as anything else.
I prefer Rico Suave.
That's it had to be said, didn't it? That was my nickname when I was a kid. Like because you know, well, because kids have no imagination, right. You know, and that comes out, and your name is Eric. All of a sudden, you become immediately Rico Suave, and I had no comeback to that. It's like it's not necessarily insulting, but it's also just awful once you hear the song that Rico Suave was known for. So there you go. The reds from this region, and this is apropos because this is what we're drinking today. This is probably the more famous wines from this area. We have the red Valpolicella, and the grapes that go into Valpolicella are Rondinella and Corvina. And the same region that makes Valpolicella makes the wine Amarone, which is fairly famous. People don't really know why. It's a big wine, and that's why people who like big wines like it. But Amarone, what is it? It's really interesting. So they dry the grapes, same grapes, but they let them get really nice and ripe on the vines. They dry them in attic drying house. So the tops of these buildings will be open to the winds, and the grapes will be put on sort of vented racks. And they're dried so that they lose some of their liquid. And so when they're pressed, there's a lot more of the solids, which predominantly is sugars, that goes into the basic liquid that then ferments. So you get this sort of raisiny, rich. It's not really sweet in as much as it's decadent, right? Like it's not like sugary, like a lot of other sweet wines are sugary, yeah, but it's very, it's not like any other big red wine out there. And then the neat sort of byproduct of that, which I think is fantastic, is Valpolicella. So going back to the little wine from that region, Ripasso. So what they take is they take the leftover, once they've made the Amarone, they take the skins that they pressed all the fruit, the juice out of, and so as not to waste their efforts, they let the Valpolicella literally pass over it, ripasso, pass over it to take on some of that sort of hedonistic fruit unctuous quality. Yeah. So a Valpolicella ripasso, and they're typically between $20 to $40 depending on the quality, can give you this sort of really quality out of a medium bodied wine, which is also Amarone's cost $80 and more. Yeah. So you tell me. And then the Valpolicella, it really shouldn't be confused with Amarone because Valpolicella, which we're drinking right now, is a wonderful summertime wine. It's light-bodied. It's fun. It's easy. It's very fruity. It's just a fun little wine. So it's really interesting that both places, both wines come from the same region, but they indeed do. And that, again, the region is the southern part of Lake Garda. For the south, along the Po River, running south from Milan, we find the region of Lambrusco. Where they make Lambrusco. This is around the city of Modena, by the way, which makes a lot of the famous balsamic vinegars, yeah? So there, Lambrusco is sort of this frothy red. It's, again, not super sweet or anything, like, but it's very kind of juicy and fruity and almost a little bit grippy, and it matches the really fatty, rich foods from this area just unbelievably well. We have some Lambrusco in cans right now, which is silly, but it's absolutely wonderful. So just a slight chill on that, and you'll like that. Of course, I cannot forget to the most famed wine besides Pinot Grigio, is Prosecco, right? Prosecco comes from the region around Venice, where the former Glera grape, now redubbed as Prosecco, is sort of a protectionist movement to say, well, you can have Glera, but you can't have Prosecco. Prosecco can only be grown in the Prosecco region. It can be Spumante, so sparkling. It can be Frizzante, which is semi-sparkling and kind of sweet, or Tranquillo, which is still, but you very, very rarely see that here. It's mostly that sort of brut or just off-dry sparkling wine that we all love so much. Goes great in mimosas. There are some more serious versions of it that are DOCG level, which is Denominazione Origine Controllata e Garantita, so the highest level of Italian wine law. So there are, and they rival a lot of other really, really good sparkling wines. So check those out. Speaking of really good sparkling wines, this region is also the home of Franciacorta. Franciacorta is not really well known in America, but it makes the best classical, that is champagne style method wine in all of Italy. It's made out of Pinot Noir and Chard. It was an area essentially literally ripping off Champagne. They're like, this is the very similar area, the very similar soils, very similar climate. Let's try to make Champagne. And they do a very good job. So Franciacorta. Lastly, I'm running out of time, so I did want to mention the last little important part of northeastern Italy, that is Friuli. Friuli is, of course, home to Pinot Grigio.
Yay!
So surprised! And they do make some unbelievable ones, especially in the Colli Orientali, which is close to the Slovenian border. And indeed, as I've noted perhaps before on this program, Slovenia, just on the other side of that border, makes really, really excellent Pinot Grigios too, because depending on where the river winds, the southeastern exposure or southwestern exposure towards the sun is optimal either in Slovenia or Friuli, depending on where you are. They are also making some really interesting Bordelaise-style blends, Cabernet, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and also their native varietal Rofosco. We have one right now called Suffenbergo, which is for $24 or whatever, one of the better bigger, nicer red wines we have in the store. It's really elegant and, you know, half the price of something you would pay for from another part of the world. So that's Friuli, again, home of really good Bordelaise wines and Pinot Grigio. So if there's anything to take away from this, it's that they don't make a lot of Pinot Grigio. Yes, they do. They make a lot of Pinot Grigio, but they make a lot of other really, really interesting wines all throughout northeastern Italy, but northeastern Italy. It's not just for Prosecco. It's not just for Pinot Grigio. It's for all sorts of stuff. We are having our tasting on Thursday. I hope you all can come out to it. It's going to be staff favorites. I guarantee if the weather is like this, it's going to be warm weather staff favorites. So nice, cool stuff. So come on in, check it out, cool down, buy some stuff, and say hi to us. And I'll talk to you all next week about Central Italy.
Eric Mahon, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday afternoon.